to the World of Fantasy. I'm Ellen.
And I'm Kurt.
First of all, I'd like to apologize for the editing mistakes we made in the last show. It was our first episode, and we're working on getting all the kinks worked out. Hopefully, this one will be better.
We're really excited about this week's show, because we'll be discussing the top 10 cheesy fantasy movies from the 80s, as well as introducing a new segment devoted to Tolkien.
We are huge Tolkien fans, and so each week we'll discuss some aspect of Professor Tolkien's works, most likely focusing on Lord of the Rings. We may discuss movies, characters, mythology, or anything else. We'll be discussing the topics in depth and assume that the listener is aware of the end of LOTR, and this is a spoiler alert. Today we'll kick off with a lively discussion of the role of hobbits in Lord of the Rings.
But first, here's a recap of some recent news. As reported on BBC News, a TV series spin-off of Star Wars will begin in production in 2008. The series will cover the 20-year period between The Revenge of the Sith and A New Hope. Gary Oldman has been confirmed as returning as Sirius Black in the fifth Harry Potter film, The Order of the Phoenix. Starting Monday, the fantasy miniseries Dark Kingdom airs on the Sci-Fi Channel. The Siegfried myth was the basis of Tolkien's Lord of the Rings, so the themes will be familiar to fantasy fans. Also, Toronto will be the location of a stage production of Tolkien's Lord of the Rings. Put on by Mervish Productions, this musical production was developed over 4 years at a cost of $28 million. It opened Thursday to mediocre reviews. Bummer.
The trivia question for today is, what is the name that Tolkien wanted to give to the book The Return of the King? Our first song is called Dreamscape Equinoxial Mix, and it's by Incidental Fusion. We recently came across this song and really liked it, so we're sharing it with you.
Thank you. And now the topic of the day, the top 10 cheesy fantasy movies of the 80s.
So I bet you're wondering about what actually constitutes a fantasy movie? Well, we'll tell you. According to Wikipedia, there are films with fantastic themes, usually involving magic or exotic fantasy worlds, as distinct from science fiction films or horror films. The category has as much to do with the approach as with content or context, and there is often a great deal of overlap between the genres. For example, much about the Star Wars saga suggests fantasy, yet it feels like science fiction, while much about Time Bandit suggests science fiction, yet it feels like fantasy.
Okay, here we go. Number 10 on our list is Willow from 1988. In this movie, a reluctant dwarf must help save a special baby from an evil queen. I haven't seen this movie in about 15 years, but I remember enjoying it when I was younger. The unlikely hero, Willow, defeats the evil queen by outwitting her using stage magic.
And now, I've never seen this movie, mainly because I was confused it with Cocoon, the one about the old people who wanted to restore their youth. Maybe I'll Netflix it and let you all know what I think on a later show.
And number 9 is The Secret of Nim from 1982, an animated tale of a field mouse that goes on an adventure to save her youngest son.
I have not seen this movie since early elementary school when it was released on video, but I remember loving it at the time. There's nothing about watching a movie all about mice. Maybe that's why I loved An American Tale.
I haven't seen this movie in a long time either. And number 8 on our list is Dark Crystal from 1982. Jen, the last of the Gelflings, must find the shard of the Dark Crystal and repair the Dark Crystal, or the rule of the Skeksis will last forever. I've always enjoyed watching the Muppets. Who doesn't like Muppets?
Oh, you forgot a quote there. We have a good quote from this movie, called End, Begin, All the Same. Big change. Sometimes good. Sometimes bad. You know, this movie always creeped me out. I love the Muppets. Yay, Miss Piggy and Fraggle Rock. But there was just something creepy about this one. I finally watched it again a couple years ago, and I liked it much better. I still say it's creepy, though.
If you say so. And number 7 is Lady Hawk from 1985. In this, a young thief is helped by a knight, Navara. It turns out the knight and his love, Isabeau, have been cursed by the bishop, causing Isabeau to be turned into a hawk during the day and Navara to turn into a wolf at night, so that they can never see each other. They then must go to the bishop's city to break the curse. And here's a quote from this wonderful movie. "Look at me, Lord. I was better off in the dungeons of Aquila. My cellmate was insane, and a murderer, but he respected me." Here's an interesting fact about the movie. Warner falsely marketed the movie as being based on a true medieval legend. Edward Camara took the issue to the Writers Guild Association and was awarded a cash settlement from Warner, but the medieval legend claim wasn't dropped.
I've only watched parts of this movie, but I loved Matthew Broderick in this film. Naive and like a wide-eyed doe, I think he was perfectly cast. You know, there was a Charmed episode in one of the first seasons in which they basically played out the whole movie in an hour. The only difference was that the man was an owl and the girl was a wolf. One of the characters, Prue, even says, "I swear I've seen this in a movie somewhere."
And number 6 on our list is The Adventures of Baron Munchausen from 1988. It's a story of the travels and experiences of a 17th century aristocrat.
Now, I've seen bits of this movie several times, but it's the third in Terry Gilliam's Trilogy of the Imagination, which also include Time Bandits and Brazil. Now, this movie is quite cheesy, but amusing, and does not follow the usual fantasy equation. The movie won 4 Academy Awards. If you're a fan of Monty Python, you might like this movie. It's bright, colorful, and witty, and I love that all the bad guys are dressed in Napoleon-like uniforms.
Now, I haven't seen this movie at all, but I did enjoy Brazil and Time Bandits, so I should see it at some time.
You know, we'll just Netflix The Adventures of Baron Munchausen when we get Willow.
All right, then. And number 5 is Legend from 1985. Tom Cruise's character, a forest boy, must stop the Lord of Darkness from killing the last unicorn and marrying a fairy princess in order to create eternal darkness. I saw this movie recently for the first time and was very amused watching a young Tom Cruise in this role. And Tim Curry as the Lord of Darkness has such a great costume.
You know, Tom Cruise was really hot in this film. He did look a little confused through most of the film, though, however. Director Ridley Scott drew most of his inspiration from the 1946 version of Beauty and the Beast, as well as such Disney animated classics as Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, Fantasia, and Bambi. This is also an Oscar-winning movie. Oh, and I love Tim Curry and everything he does.
Number four on your list is Labyrinth from 1986. In this movie, Sarah is babysitting her baby brother when she accidentally gives him to a Goblin King, and she must complete the labyrinth or her brother will be turned into a goblin. What I remember most about this movie was the puzzles that Sarah must solve to get through the labyrinth, including one part where there are two doors where one leads to safety and one to death. This was parodied in the movie The Tenth Kingdom, where the main character solves a puzzle by throwing the talking frog through one of the doors, which then promptly blows up.
I really do not remember much of this movie except thinking that I really wanted to walk a labyrinth and laughing at the cheesy outfit and hair of David Bowie. I still think it's a bit odd that David Bowie acted in a fantasy movie.
And number three on our list is Ghostbusters from 1984. In this, three pseudoscientists and one dude who'll believe anything for a steady paycheck go around New York capturing ghosts and spirits. They then must save the world from the coming of Gozer the Gozerian. Some choice quotes from this movie include, "Ray, when someone asks you if you're a god, you say yes!"
"Somebody blows their nose and you want to keep it?"
This is a movie that puts the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man into movies with the intent of destroying New York. Who wouldn't love that? They could have made s'mores for the whole city. And then there was Gozer the Gozerian in their rather provocative bubble outfit.
This movie still rocks. It's ingrained in all of my memories of childhood. The roller rink loved playing the title track from this movie from the illustrious Ray Parker Jr. Incidentally, this song is still on every Halloween CD in production. Cheesy, definitely, but hilarious, and has some of the most memorable quotes of any movie. This movie has had one heck of a marketing campaign, which is used in everything from bulletin boards to action figures.
Number two on our list is The Neverending Story from 1984. Bastian, a young boy, enters the world of fantasy by reading an ancient book he stole from a bookstore. The fantasy world is on the verge of destruction. Bastian's help is needed to save it.
Oh, here's a quote. "A hole would be something. No, it was nothing."
And here are some interesting facts regarding the book and the film version. The English translation of the book calls the magic land Fantastica, although Fantasia is a closer translation of the original German name, Fantasien. The film and television adaptations all use Fantasia. The original German novel, along with the early English prints, utilized two font colors, red indicating scenes that took place in the real world, and green in scenes in Fantastica. The author was supposedly very unhappy with the first movie, but I think it was great.
I love this movie. I have seen this movie too many times to count. Every bullied child dreams of being special and finding a world in which he is important and needed. The book by Michael Ende is far superior, and the movie is definitely cheesy. The special effects are very 1984, and I think this movie would have looked a lot more like Chronicles of Narnia if it's done today. In fact, I wonder how long it'll take for someone to remake this movie. The acting is great, and the movie moves at the perfect pace. I love the different creatures, especially Falcor, the Luck Dragon, and Rockbiter. I begged my mom for years to get a Falcor for me so I could fly to school.
And finally, number one on our list is The Princess Bride from 1987. The story of true love. Wesley falls in love with Buttercup before he goes off to make money. And once Buttercup believes he's killed by pirates, he gets engaged to Prince Humperdinck. Wesley returns and has to rescue Buttercup from the prince who has plans on killing her after the wedding. There are so many wonderful quotes from this movie, including, "Hello, my name is Inigo Montoya. You killed my father. Prepare to die."
He didn't fall? Inconceivable!
You keep using that word. I don't think it means what you think it means. This was one of my favorite movies when I was growing up. It has so many memorable scenes, including the scene with Miracle Max, played by Billy Crystal, and the final fight between Inigo Montoya and Count Reuben, and the fire swamp with the RUSS.
Now, I've only seen this movie a couple of times, but it is the best fantasy movie of the 80s and even beyond. I love the witty humor, and any movie with a WWF wrestler, especially Andre the Giant, is going to be cheesy. I half expected him to body slam everybody, but he turned out to be a fairly decent actor, especially in this role. Cheesy? Most definitely. But it is intended to be that way. A great story, a well-delivered movie, and that is why it is our number one 1980s cheesy fantasy movie.
And now here's another song for you, called The Middle Earth Bragging Song. It is by our friend Mark Dunn of the Brobdingnagian Barbs. We love these guys. And we'll put a link to their website in the show notes. But before the song, here's a little something cool.
Hey, this is Mark Gunn with the Brobdingnagian Bards, and you're listening to the World of Fantasy podcast. Sláinte.
We're the race of men, conquer valleys and glens. We build huge towers in the sky. We're strong and we're bold, though it be hot or cold. We'll fight everyone till we die. Oh, we'll never give up the mountain as long as hope remains. And you will never see a race as old as we're the race of dwarves. In our caverns we forge and shape the ore that we mine. We're stout with beards, but give us a beer and we'll drink to the gold that we find. We'll never give up the mountain as long as there's money to be made. And you will never see a race as old as we're the race of elves in forests we dwell, at one with the earth and the sky. We're the race firstborn, and our only concern is how close to our gardens you lie. Oh, we'll never give up the mountain, at least until our time is done. And you'll never see a race as old as we're the race of Ents, and we're what was meant when they said there are shepherds to trees. We've been stuffy and slow since our women left home, and many of us have fallen asleep. But we'll never give up the mountain. Our trees are there to defend, and you will never see a race as old as trees. I am Tom Bombadil, I can never stand still, there's too many creatures to see. I've many songs to sing and a wife in the stream, so whistle a diddle diddle, call me. Oh, I'll never give up the mountain, or say I'm the oldest alive. For you'll probably see a hobbit climbing a tree, and it won't matter diddle, it won't matter diddle, it won't matter diddle how high.
What a great song. Kicking off our new segment on Tolkien, we are starting with a very important culture that was somehow omitted from the song we just heard. Welcome to Hobbit 101. Now, hobbits go back to ancient days of Middle-earth, but since the elves were the only ones to record history, hobbits were not mentioned. Hobbits lie at the core of the story of Lord of the Rings and are very important. Tolkien describes hobbits as a group that is peace-loving and avoidant of big people and technology. They seldom reach more than 3 feet in height, although Bendobris Took reached 4'5" and was able to ride a horse. Hobbits are merry folk who wear bright colors and enjoy as many as 6 meals per day when they can get them. They are prosperous and community-oriented. They have curly brown hair and seldom wear shoes over their tough, leathery-bottomed feet, which are adorned with curly brown hair such as that on their heads. They live in holes burrowed into hillsides and enjoy gardening very much. The story of LOTR revolves around 5 specific hobbits, each with a defined role, including Bilbo, Frodo, Samwise, Merry, and Pippin. Bilbo met Gandalf and was reluctantly sent on an adventure with some dwarves, upon where he met some trolls, a dragon, and won over the dwarves who gave him the Mithril coat. Bilbo's friendship continued through the years, and on his 71st birthday, he left the Shire to live out the remainder of his life in Rivendell. Bilbo was very rich from his adventures and was very different from the rest of the hobbits. His relatives were always bugging him in the hopes of acquiring some of his wealth, but of course Bilbo left it all to Frodo. My favorite Bilbo quote is, "It's a dangerous business, Frodo, going out your door. You step onto the road, and if you don't keep your feet, there's no telling where you might be swept off to." Now that leads me to Frodo, who was orphaned at an early age and fostered by Bilbo. He loved Bilbo's stories and spent his childhood dreaming of taking adventures like Bilbo, but he didn't really want to leave the Shire. Frodo was in love with the Shire and was well content with the hobbit culture and lifestyle. Frodo was a strong, resilient hobbit who understood that the ring came to him for a reason. His naive thoughts at the beginning were evident when he met Aragorn for the first time. The hobbits did not have any weapons, and Frodo was trying to keep the ring and his quest a secret. Now, for all these Lord of the Rings quotes, we're going to do a little role play. In this one, Kurt's going to play Strider, and I'm Frodo.
I'm Frodo.
Oops, I'm Strider. Kurt's Frodo. Let's try that again.
What do you want?
A little more caution from you. That is no trinket you carry.
I carry nothing.
Indeed? I can avoid being seen if I wish, but to disappear entirely, that is a rare gift. Now Sam, who is described as being somewhat dim-witted, was a devoted friend of Frodo from the beginning of the story. Gandalf made Sam promise to stay with Frodo, and he took his mission seriously. Now in all of these quotes, I am going to play Sam, and Kurt is going to play Frodo.
Go back, Sam. I'm going to Mordor alone.
Of course you are, and I'm coming with you. Here's another. I made a promise, Mr. Frodo. A promise. Don't you leave him, Samwise Gamgee. And I don't mean to. I don't mean to. His endless love and support of Frodo is evident as Frodo started to distance himself as the ring's power took effect on him. By the end of Two Towers, we realize that Frodo is starting to become wary from the ring and is fading of his former self. Sam was the one to keep him going and provide the support he needed. My favorite quote of the movie is,
"I can't do this, Sam.
I know, it's all wrong. By rights, we shouldn't even be here, but we are. It's like in the great stories, Mr. Frodo, the ones that really mattered. Full of darkness and danger they were. Because sometimes you didn't want to know the end, because how could the end be happy? And how could the world go back to the way it was when so much bad had happened? But in the end, it's only a passing thing, a shadow. Even darkness must pass. A new day will come, and when the sun shines, it will shine out the clearer. Those were the stories that stayed with you, that meant something, even if you were too small to understand why. But I think, Mr. Frodo, I do understand. I know now. Folks in those stories had lots of chances in turning back, only they didn't. They kept going because they were holding on to something."
What are you holding on to, Sam?
"That there's some good left in this world, Mr. Frodo, and it's worth fighting for." Now, Sam, the optimist, also provides some comedy in the following quote when talking to Gollum. "What we need are a few good taters."
"What's taters, precious? What's taters?"
"Potatoes. Boil 'em, mash 'em, stick 'em in a stew. Lovely big golden chips with a nice piece of ripe fish. Even you couldn't say no to that."
"Well, yes, we could. Spoiling nice fish, giving us too raw and wriggling. You keep those nasty chips."
Ugh, oh, you're hopeless. Hey, good impression on Gollum there, Kurt. The closer Sam and Frodo and Gollum move to Mordor, the more difficult it becomes for Sam and Frodo, and the more Gollum wedges him between the hobbits. At one heartbreaking point, Frodo seems to no longer recognize his companion. And Sam says, "It's me! I'm your Sam! Don't you know you're Sam?" At the foot of Mount Doom, Frodo gives up. Sam realizes how close they are to achieving their impossible goal and takes matters into his own hands.
"I can see him. I can see him with my waking eyes."
"Then let's be rid of it. I can't carry for you, Mr. Frodo, but I can carry you." So that leads us to Merry and Pippin, who really provide a lot of comedy relief from the intense storyline. And here are some of our favorite quotes from the movies. I'm going to play Merry, and Kurt's going to play Pippin. "I don't think he knows about second breakfast, Pip."
"What about elevensies? Luncheon? Afternoon tea? Dinner? Supper? He knows about them, doesn't he?"
Oh, I wouldn't count on it. And at the House of Elrond.
Besides, she needs people of intelligence on this sort of mission, quest, thing.
Well, that rules you out, Pip. However, we see a change in Merry and Pip through the story, when they start to understand the complexities of their mission, when you see how much the two care about each other. Pippin is like a big brother to Merry, and tries to look out for him. Oh, here, this is for the road.
The last of the Longbottom leaf?
I know you've run out. You smoke too much, Pippin.
We'll see each other again, won't we?
I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen. Merry and Pippin become more mature and strong characters throughout the story, and I especially loved their interactions with Treebeard in Fangorn Forest, when they tried to convince Treebeard and the Ents to fight back against Saruman. Ultimately, they were the ones to inadvertently keep most of the Fellowship pursuing the mission together. If Boromir had not given his life to defend Merry and Pippin, and if the Hobbits had not been kidnapped by Saruman's army, then the story would not have continued. It was the Hobbits' welfare that convinced Aragorn, Gimli, and Legolas to pursue the troops and rescue their friends. In this manner, they kept most of the Fellowship together and ultimately were able to achieve their goal. Now, Sam and Frodo had every odd against them. They were not skilled warriors, they were very small, were kind and peaceful beings, and did not know the lay of the land. However, these characteristics also aided their journey, because the enemy was not looking for two little hobbits. They were an unlikely pair to challenge Sauron. Through the books, the hobbits gain skills, self-confidence, and a passion for defeating Sauron that is remarkable, and do contribute a certain flavor in the war. Would the battle have been won if Sam and Frodo had failed? We'll never know. But I really don't see how, for the ring would have been recovered by Sauron, and Middle-earth would have been overtaken. The magic that the ring possessed would have been too much for the opposition. I love the moral of the story, that even the smallest person can change the world. I have always believed that, and I guess it is that passion that has led me to my career as a therapist. I am a supporter of the little people, and I think that is part of the reason that Professor Tolkien's works have sounded with so many people over the decades. We all want to feel as if we make a difference. And that leads to the end of our brief discussion on hobbits.
And then next week's show, we're going to discuss the myths and legends surrounding the tale of King Arthur, from literature, pop culture, history, and more. Also, in containing the cultures of Middle-earth, we'll discuss wizards and dwarves.
Now, I bet you want to know the answer to that trivia question. In case you missed it, the question was, what is the name that Tolkien wanted to give the book The Return of the King? The answer is The War of the Ring. Tolkien felt that the name Return of the King gave away the ending, and I concur. Well, that's all for tonight, folks. We hope you've had a great time, and we'll talk to you again next week. Night! You can drop us a line about anything at all at fantasypodcast@gmail.com. We would love to hear from all of you. Also, check out our website at web.mac.com/video-kitty/iweb/wof/podcast/podcast.html. Wow, that's a long one, but we'll put more up on there as time progresses. The music tonight has been provided from the Podshow Podsafe Music Network. Check it out at music.podshow.com.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.